Another episode in the can. We spoke to Kerry Rose from Rise at Seven. It was
an
amazing chat about PR, digital PR. I'm trying to do this intro while Yo's on a massive delay. So if you hear some random noises that don't make sense, that's why. But we had an amazing chat about digital PR and SEO. Really interesting, eye-opening stuff about TikTok SEO and how you need to be doing that right away. So even if you're not interested in SEO, there's a shitload of stuff in this episode that you wouldn't have considered before. If you're doing any kind of content creation, there's a lot to learn. And I actually took multiple notes during this of pieces of content that I am going to turn into LinkedIn content. So keep your eyes peeled for some of that.
Yeah, no, the Carrie is the attention grabbing queen. Whether it's through digital PR or social SEO, she really understands people in general and like how people search and how to get them interested in what you're selling in your brand. So yeah, it was great chat, lots of insights. She came through. So yeah, hope you enjoy. Make sure you follow the podcast to get more like this every week. And enjoy.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, Kerry.
Hello.
That was a good entrance.
You just jumped in front of the camera.
I know. I'm trying to like create a setup where I've got my laptop on charge, but then I've got good lighting, so I'm kind of like pulling extension cables and things like that.
I know your pain. I'm sorry that we're late. I just came to sit down my laptop and it's doing that fucking thing where you got the battery on the screen, you know, and you're like, I've got it plugged in and it won't turn on.
Yeah, no, honestly, I was a little bit late as well. The train was delayed, so I was running to the office. I didn't want to be late for you guys, but yeah, we're here.
Oh, we're here. The things we'll do for the content.
I know, yeah, it's all about the content.
It's great to have you on the pod.
We've been talking about this for a while, haven't we? And we finally got it in. So yeah, we've been in each other's DMs and commenting each other's work and stuff like that. So it's good to finally get some time together and chat everything marketing.
Exactly.
Obviously, Kerry, we know who you are. And for maybe the five people listening that don't know who Kerry Rose is, then maybe we start with just a quick intro for you and get people warmed up.
Yeah, of course. So I'm Kerry, born and bred in the UK, but I do a lot of work in both UK and US now. I guess my history, I've always worked in agency side, search marketing specifically. When I talk about search marketing, my main kind of skill set and experience is in organic. So I've worked in two of the biggest and best SEO agencies in the UK and probably I'd say Europe. And then I founded my own agency 4 years ago called Rise at Seven. That's me.
You've been modest with that, right? It's been a pretty successful founding.
Yes, it has. Yes, it's been a crazy 4 years, really successful. And I have a lot of opinions of why I think that is. I'm sure we'll get stuck into it.
Yeah, I think one of the reason why you've been very successful is you've tackled some of the things you saw for your client in a different angle or like a different way, like digital PR and like social SEO and all those good things. But yeah, I think in this episode, we really want to pick your brain on like what are the hot topics for you at the moment, or things that you that you're working on that you think are important in world of marketing and like kind of like jam on those. I'm very happy to have you on, so let's do this.
Sounds good.
So I guess we would like to try and start with one of the things that I think you talk a lot about, maybe like your one of your number one topic is the kind of the social search angle, especially with TikTok, and I'd like to just start with that, see where you are with this this strategy at the moment. Like what does that mean, and how do you like kind of like execute on that, etc.
Give you some back history, I guess, of where I started to think about social search and why I think it's so big to this day. So I guess a bit of history of my thought about SEO and advertising, I guess. So I've always been obsessed with advertising, and I thought to myself, if I ever leave the SEO industry, I'd more than likely go into advertising, because I was really interested in the way that people use different advertising principles essentially to capture attention. And one of the things I realized is everyone in marketing is trying to capture attention, whether that is on TikTok, whether that is, you know, in the high street on billboards, that we're literally in the battle of attention. And obviously that was a big part of what I was doing on Google. My job is to capture attention on the SERP. And I think what we're seeing or what I've seen in particular is there's two ways of getting in front of customers. And one of the things that advertising does often is they put brands and products in front of people, not actually knowing if that's what they want. We have no idea whether people want to buy a Snicker, you know? We have no idea whether people are actually looking for car insurance. We're just putting our brand out there, hoping that somebody out there wants car insurance right now and they're going to buy from us. Whereas I work in search. I know exactly what people want every minute of every day. They're literally putting it into Google to find, because they're searching for that product. And we can use that from insight point of view. But what I saw, so it was about a year ago, one of the big things that kind of, I guess, leads our way of making decisions in SEO is keyword volumes. And one of the things that we as a team saw is that keyword volumes on Google for certain keywords, not all, was completely plummeting into the ground. You know, even down to small things like bars in London. If you look at keyword volumes for bars in London on Google, it's the lowest it's ever been in the last 15 years. Like literally people aren't Googling for bars in London anymore. It's crazy. And I remember working with a particular client in the travel space. So the travel space has obviously been really impacted during the pandemic. And we saw search volumes go down for certain travel terms. And there was a lot of panic internally all the way up to the board. Okay, well, there's no demand for this anymore. People aren't wanting to spend the money. We've got a cost of living crisis. And I actually said, no, this isn't a demand problem. It's not that people don't want to go on holiday anymore. It's not that people aren't looking for lodge holidays and hot tub breaks and things like that. It's just that they're going somewhere else. Where is it they're going? So when we looked into platforms like TikTok and YouTube, even Instagram and Pinterest, you know, bars in London is the highest it's ever been. Literally searches for bars in London are like that on TikTok. You're talking 5,000-6,000 searches a month. People are looking for a certain type of bar in London. And it was the same for the travel space. So I could see people was going to new channels to search. And what I realized is social then become not only a social platform where you discover brands, but it's also a search platform where people are going to discover answers for search queries. They're looking for products. They're looking for ideas and things like that. So I think that's what transformed my way of thinking. I put that out to the world. I put that out to the world about a year ago. And I was like, I'm telling you, TikTok is going to be the next search engine. TikTok is going to be a search platform. We're going to be looking at optimizing on that platform. I think we're actually going to start investing more SEO budget into those. Not just TikTok, but YouTube and Pinterest and things like that. And I got annihilated online. I remember... there were certain people like, no, it's bullshit. Google will always be the dominant player. You know, the volumes aren't accurate. People aren't actually going. If they are going, it's usually kids. Like, you know, all these different stereotypes. Full of bullshit. And I'm like, I'm telling you. So there was a big conference in March in the SEO space. And I stood on stage and I announced that we now have a social SEO team. And this is specific for creating and optimizing content for search for on social platforms. Some people thought I was crazy, but that's generated already £1 million since I launched it. And that was a few months back. We're working with huge global brands that are like seeing that, you know, even TripAdvisor, if you Google things to do in New York, they're really struggling to capture that traffic. So they're looking at new ways to capture it. And, you know, TikTok and YouTube are the biggest answers right now. So I think we've seen a massive shift from an SEO perspective. And it's one of the biggest opportunities I think SEO should be jumping on. But I think
It's really interesting. Yeah. It makes complete sense, right? If people are naturally in a platform all the time and there is a search functionality in that platform. You know, I've got people at work that have been telling me for the last couple of months that they find places to go for brunch. That's the kind of thing they do, you know, they're in the world, which I don't live anymore. You can go for brunch on the weekend. And they're like, I just now suggested stuff that comes up in my feed, just like Brunch Spots Manchester, and they just get it all from TikTok. So it makes complete sense.
And if you think about it, that quote that I said at the beginning, that advertising puts brands in front of people, not really knowing what we want. I know you guys, I've seen your guys work in previous brands. You guys are creating content, adverts, paid ads, hoping that somebody out there is going to buy your content. But we're expecting them to want our thing, right? Whereas if we're optimizing for SEO on TikTok, we already know they want it because they're searching for it. So it makes conversions and click-through rates so much higher and it's cheaper as well. You know, don't need to put paid behind it. It's purely organic, and you know, you're getting those click throughs instead. So yeah, I think a lot of people are ignoring it, especially in social as well.
What walk us through the process in as much detail as you want to share. How does it work in, if you're like a brand, whatever the size, and you want to like start optimizing for social SEO, let's say on TikTok, like what's the like 2-3 steps that you can do to like start capitalizing on some of these this traffic?
So the first thing you do is keyword research. You want to find out what is it people are actually searching for on what channels. And then you break that down by intent. I guess what I would advise is go after the commercial terms first. So if the intent is to buy, they're looking for tickets for Eiffel Tower, or they're looking for things to do in Paris, you know, whatever it is, then people are clearly going to Paris, they're looking for things to do, they're in buying mode. I would do keyword research, break it down by intent, and go after those key commercial keywords first. So that's the first step. In terms of keyword research tools, the best ones at the minute is keywordtool.io. That's one of the best tools that we use. One thing I will say is that keyword volumes are different on every platform, but that's the norm anyway for SEO. If you go to Ahrefs or Sistrix or SEMrush, the keyword volumes are going to be semi kind of different. But we are noticing they are pretty accurate in terms of search volumes on keywordtool.io is one of the best ones. So the first step is keyword research, break it down by intent. Then you need to be looking at creating content on a volume perspective. So it's not that you're going to create one video and it'll, you know, rank for that keyword and then off you pop. You may need to create 4, 5, 6 pieces of content, giving signals to TikTok's algorithm that, okay, you guys are experts when it comes to things to do Paris. So that's already a signal that you guys know what you're talking about. You're giving different suggestions. And then the third thing, once you've created the content, is optimizing it. So there's loads of little tips and tricks I can give you guys, but the captions is the most important thing. So putting the keywords in the captions, long form is best. So if you can literally write out, you know, 100 to 200 words in that caption, that's the best. Wow. Another little hack is if you mention the keyword in the first 3 seconds, that's a signal to the algorithm that, okay, you are talking about this topic. So voiceover is one of the things. So if you're doing a lot of green screen content, if you mention the keyword in the first 3 seconds, that's the best thing. But ultimately, the algorithm has changed recently. It never used to be based on following or likes or you know, views or anything like that. And it still isn't to this day. But the only thing that the TikTok algorithm is taking into perspective is views. So if your content is the most viewed when it comes to recommendations of things to do Paris, for an example, then TikTok clearly sees this is a useful piece of content and puts it up to the top. So getting views, you can manipulate it, put a bit of paid behind it, and then you win. But that's ultimately the three simplest steps. There's obviously a lot more complication behind it, but to be honest, I don't think TikTok SEO is that complicated right now.
Interesting. So paid, you can give yourself a little unfair advantage by putting a little bit of paid behind it to get those initial views.
Yeah, boost it, get the views up. Sometimes it doesn't work because the algorithm knows, wait, actually, there's a better piece of content out there. You put some paid behind this to boost it. There's a better authority talking about this topic. I think the algorithm's getting a lot better at like signals of trust and authority, if that makes sense. Whereas I don't think it used to be. I think it used to be quite simple. Whereas I think it's getting a lot more clever of understanding your wider content and what you talk about. But yeah, a little bit of paid may boost it and it'll hold it up to the top. But it's very similar to Google. So if you try rank on Google, you may get position one, but tomorrow I might look at it and I'm now position two. It does fluctuate. It usually stays the same. So like if you type in Nuki onto TikTok, we rank for position 1, 2, and 3 for most of those terms. So Nuki, things to do Nuki, because we have a UK holiday brand. And they do fluctuate, but we've held it for about 6 months now. So it's quite strong.
Wow. And in terms of longevity of content, when you're talking about TikTok content, like you, so you generate a load at first to get the volume up there. Is it like a cyclical process of you have to keep producing more types, otherwise it's just going to fade out?
Yeah. So we're, on average, we're creating about 10 to 15 pieces of content a month per keyword.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And this is organic. Sometimes we'll delete it. Well, sometimes we'll delete it if it doesn't perform from an SEO perspective, because yeah, it might get views and engagement, but what it can do is ruin your chances of ranking. So it's poor performing content from an organic point of view. Let's get rid. So it is about scale, but it is about trying to get signals of authority. One of the things we are doing as well is when you tie that with PR, and we're seeing that if you are, you know, talking about things to do Paris in the media, and you're also creating content on TikTok, then that's also signals that the algorithm should be putting you up to the top. So yeah, I think TikTok's going to start taking off site, you know, off TikTok signals into the platform as well to ranking that content.
That's interesting. Very interesting. And I think one of the way to know that TikTok picked up the topic or the keyword is that you see in the search bar, right? Like after a few hours, it shows up at the top, and that means you're somewhere on that page for that keyword. One thing that we've done recently at Nude, which is exactly that, we created a piece of content for Lifetime ISA, which is the account that we promote. We saw it got a nice amount of organic views. We pinned it at the top of our profile. We're getting questions, so I'm boosting it at the same time. So then we're getting more and more questions, and we're replying to those questions with like more and more videos. So then you're just overloading the search results for that particular topic or that particular keyword with your videos, and you're becoming the number one authority for that one. And then if you replicate that with like 10, 15, 20, well, I don't know, 100 keywords at scale, if you're a big company, then you have the budget to do that and the creators to do that, that you can go wild with this.
That's exactly it. One of the things, one of the little hacks that we're doing, so for an example, we've got a video for one of our clients, Dermalogica, that ranks for the keyword skincare. And what we then do is look at, well, what comments and questions are people asking about skincare? And a lot of them are asking, what's the best skincare for dry skin? What's the best skincare for over 55s? They're already people, you know, people are asking them. So clearly they're searching for them. And that, what that gives us an idea of, you know, when I said we have like 15 pieces of content for one keyword, that creates those ideas for 15 pieces of content. So we'll create, okay, the best ones for dry skin, the best ones for over 55. Those comment tactics is what basically gives us keyword ideas as well. Exactly. So I think taking comments and questions of what people are asking about that one piece of content gives you ideas for what's next. Does that make sense?
It does. Like a nice virtuous loop, basically, of like a nice video ranking, more comments, replying to those comments, more videos, more comments, etc. etc.
The interesting thing is, though, you know, I've been talking about how TikTok is going to be taking searches from Google. And the bigger, you know, as you know, it is, it's proven to be, we've got amazing case studies to back it, etc. But one of the things the SEO industry, they struggle is they can't report on it. They're like, you know, we're not going to invest in this because we can't prove that, you know, it's going to drive traffic to our website, because ultimately that's what people want. It's traffic from TikTok to the website, and they want to make money from it. But TikTok is very strict about, we don't want people off our platform. So they've banned external links. You can't get a link from a piece of content. You can have a link in a bio. You can increase, you know, conversions in that way, clear CTAs we've paid, etc. But from an organic point of view, TikTok does not like sending people off their platform. So SEOs don't like that. They want traffic to a website. However, what TikTok is now started to report on, so if you go into your TikTok analytics and look at specific videos, it shows you now... the average ranking of that video. So it shows you rank, this video ranks position 3, you know, for XP term. It also shows you, say if you've got 15,000 views of this video, it'll then break it down by 70% of the views came from search, or and 30% came from FYP. Because that's really the two ways people are going to discover your content. It's the FYP page or it's search. And TikTok now breaks that down. So, you know, SEOs are starting to see data now. They're starting to see, how can I report on this? Which is really interesting. And the number one thing that I think is very exciting is the CTR. So if you get position 1 to 3 on TikTok, the CTR is anywhere between 60 and 70%. Try replicate that on Google. Try to get that on Google. It's like Google are average, talking 30 to 40 something like
yeah,
that.
For so. Number one, right? Yeah.
Like you cannot replicate that. So it's very high click through rates. People are clearly not just watching one video; they're looking at others and then getting ideas to make that purchase decision. So I do think more SEO reporting is coming from TikTok, and I'm seeing it daily. I'm seeing more features, and you know, if you follow me on Twitter or LinkedIn, I literally tweet TikTok SEO update, and I'll share another one. Anything I see, I'm going to put out to the world because I'm seeing it daily now.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it makes sense that if you've got the TikTok pixel on your site, they'll be tying up and saying, you know, visits to your site based on people that clicked on your, you know, on your piece of content.
One of the things we're encouraging, and I know you guys are in the game of performance, like you understand performance, you understand how to get people to do something, you know, click on an ad and buy. Ultimately, when it's organic, they can't do that, right? They can't click on to go and, you know, go to a website. So what we're encouraging people to do is go to Google. So say if we have top five things to do in Paris, and the number one thing is a romantic boat ride through, you know, Lake X. I'm just making this up off the top of my head, by the way. I have no idea if that's a top
Sounds
thing.
Great.
Yeah, I know, right? say if that's one of the top things to do, obviously what we would do as a CTA at the end of the video is search X on Google. So say if it's search X Tour, Viator, or X Tour, TripAdvisor, because then what you're doing is you're not just sending people to Google, because we can track that straight away, branded and product search. So people are looking for the product and alongside our brand, and we can clearly see, well, the activity we did is this thing on TikTok. So branded search and brand plus product search is the thing we're kind of encouraging people to do. And the good thing about that is, if more people are searching for your brand and your product, that's a signal to Google also to rank you higher. So if more people are looking for your product, you know, your branded product, then, you know, when they're not looking for your brand, they're just looking for the product, Google's going to put you higher. So you get double whammy there, if that makes sense.
I guess the tricky part there is that if you're not appearing on the page, you know, the first SERP for Google, and it's, I suppose that's a tricky place to play, right? Because people search and they can't find your brand.
Exactly. So I'll give you a bit of history, and it might go take us onto another kind of topic, I guess. Or that's always been my opinion of where I think advertising is going wrong. So when I used to work in SEO in my old agency, I used to follow adverts, you know, TV adverts, TV commercials, even movies and things, and just see that they're generating demand for things, and often they don't capture it. One of the big case studies that I always talk about, a bit of a different one, I haven't really talked about that much on LinkedIn, but Zara. Zara, a couple of years ago, they did this big influencer campaign, and everybody was wearing a pair of pink jeans. And I remember falling in love with them. I was like, I really want a pair of pink jeans. Like, they looked amazing. And, you know, all these influencers wearing them, doing these dances, blah, blah, blah. And they really dominated the pink jean space. However, I was tracking that. I was tracking search, you know, volumes as a result of it. And pink jeans versus pink jeans Zara, pink jeans was like 10 times higher than pink jeans Zara. And if you typed at the time pink jeans into Google, Zara were nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
So they was generating demand for pink jeans, and they didn't even rank for it. And actually it was Next and Boohoo, which was one of my clients, and we got all the traffic. And that's why I was like, you're thick. Like, why are you doing this? And that's I actually see this happening all the time in influencer, in advertising. They're generating demand for something that they don't actually capture on the other side through SEO. And that's where I come up with Rise at 7. I was like, somebody needs to not just capture demand and think about how to improve SEO. They need to also think cleverly how to generate demand and then capture it at the same time. But that's why I started working in this space and created Rise at 7.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, you want them to be searching something that, you know, the something pink jean, you know, you don't want to be doing that. It's when we were at Net-a-Porter, I always used to think that we were in a nice place, because if someone wants to buy an Hermes whatever, they will search that and we will most likely come up. But then you think about Boohoo and you're like, what the hell? You know, if you're selling just a pair of skinny jeans, the competition there is like unbelievable. So it's incredibly hard.
Do you know what's really interesting? I think this is a good little story for anyone that works in SEO. So we work with the Boohoo group. And if you look at the Boohoo group, they own Debenhams, they own Boohoo, Nasty Gal, Pretty Little Thing. And we actually worked with all of those brands. And somebody asked me the other day, well, surely they compete with each other. Like, surely they don't really want to work with the same agency, because they're like, wait, who gets the traffic? Do we want Pretty Little Thing to get the traffic or Boohoo? And I said, they don't care because they own all the brands as long as they get the clicks. No matter where it goes, whether it's Debenhams, Boohoo, NASA Gal, Pretty Little Thing, as long as they're there in the SERP and they get the clicks, that's it. So that's the Boohoo model. That's what they're doing. They're trying to get as many clicks as possible just by owning the full part of the SERP. So yeah, it's really interesting. I love it. I love SEO in this way. Geeky SEO.
Well, I mean, what about the future of that though, right? With all the changes that are coming out to the SERPs or like no search AI based stuff. I mean, that's gonna be a crazy world in a few years.
It is. I have an opinion a little bit on it. So SGE is the Google AI update. Essentially SGE, search generative experience, is Google is trying to answer people's queries using AI rather than sending people to brands. I don't think people trust it. I don't think people trust AI answers just yet. What I think will happen is I think AI answers on Google will steal traffic from an informational point of view. So say if people are looking for what size is a size 16, you know, what they're looking for, you know, your measurement of your waist and things like that. I think AI will steal those sort of searches and traffic. But if people are looking for a pair of pink jeans, I don't think AI is going to steal that one. I think, you know, people are going to be competing through, you know, both paid and organic. But I do think organic on Google is going to be hit quite big. And I think we're going to be moving away from search engine optimization and to search experience optimization. It's all about, right, well, where are people searching from start to end? You know, they first go to Instagram when they're deciding on a holiday. They then go to Pinterest at things to do. They then go to Google to look for deals. You know, we need to find the full user journey and basically optimize the experience rather than the engine. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does make sense.
That's why I think it's going to happen.
I've got a controversial thought, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, right? But in that example you just gave, when people are searching, doing an information search, and the SEO kind of practice of, let's think of all the informational searches that we can have around, let's just say, like, size, what size is this, waist size is a size 16. If I do that search and I arrive at a page and it answers my question, I'm not 100% sure if the average person is like, cool, they've answered my question, I'm going to go and look at the shit they sell, versus... Yeah. I've got my answer. I'm blind to everything else on that page and I'm fucking off back.
Exactly it. Yeah, I agree. And that's why, like, I think, you know, funny enough, I work quite a lot in fashion. And when we're trying to attract size guide traffic, really what we're trying to do is get people to trust that our sizes is better than anybody else's. So, you know, there's a brand thing there that Zara and H&M, their sizes are crap. You know, if you're a size 10, you have to buy size 16 because it won't fit you, etc. So the size guides is more about building trust and optimizing that way and then hopefully getting the conversion later on. But yeah, I agree. I think people go and get their information and then they bounce. And I think that's the big challenge with informational content on Google in that way.
We just got to wait and see what the world of search looks like in the next few years, right?
I'm excited. Someone said something once, so a very wise guy who I admire massively, he made a statement on stage in the SEO community and not many people agreed with him, but he said, we all think we're chasing Google. Like, Google's moving so fast, innovating, and we're the ones chasing Google. We're constantly trying to figure out what the next update is going to be. But actually, Google's just chasing us. Google is chasing users. Users are moving faster than Google. And we need to be thinking about users more than anything else. And I 100% agree. So what I've challenged my team, so over the last like year and a half, my job is not to optimize and figure out algorithms, it's to figure out people. Because I think people are moving faster. Yeah. Like, one of the things I said to my team is, I always like this. We as humans, you know, we adapt, we evolve, etc. And one of the things we do is we make up our own keywords. So, you know, there's like slang words that we make up now for certain products, and even say things that you say to your friends. Well, these now are actually keywords people are putting into Google. So this is not Google innovating. This is literally people. People are calling certain products different things. So like we work with Pretty Little Thing. And one of the things that we saw that when people was buying joggers, you know, joggers, hoodies, like loungewear, we saw that people was actually searching for airport outfits. People was like, I want an airport outfit. And they classed that as an airport outfit. That was like their own little category they've built in their head. So we followed the consumer. Okay, well, they're calling it an airport outfit. We're calling it loungewear. But we created a category and we're getting 21,000 visits a month off the back of it. But that's the thing. I think consumers are moving faster than Google, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you think about voice search, right, the way that we, just as you were talking there, right, you think about your average search. If you're trying to find something and you don't know what it is, but you can describe it, everyone does those weird, like, Googles. Yeah. You know exactly what to write the keywords. But if you're doing a voice search, it will actually be really difficult to replicate the type of thing that you type in that way. So, it's interesting. Will people adopt search in that way? Will people just be, you know, fear change or move off to a different engine that isn't forcing them to do some weird, like, AI generated response? It's gonna be cool.
There's a big debate as well at the minute of, like, whether TikTok is a search engine, because if you Google the definition of a search engine, what it basically says is a search engine pulls content from the web to give an answer to a search query. And everyone's saying, well, TikTok doesn't pull content from the web, it pulls content from its own platform. But I'm like, yeah, but there's a reason for that. And it's because Google's content at the minute, the World Wide Web, the content is, am I allowed to swear? It's shite.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to swear? It's shite. And that's the whole point. It's bouncing. People aren't getting the answers. It's full of ads that pop up, you know, trying to click on and get an answer in a short time. And that's why people are going to new channels, because they can get, you know, how to make a boiled egg in 15 seconds rather than reading a blog about it and getting loads of pop-up ads.
And it's from people. Like, it's a 600 word article. Yeah.
It's like you said earlier. It's coming from people. It's people to people. It's a search engine, but it's full of people talking about the most random shit, and they like that. People like to consume that.
Yeah, there's a guy in advertising called Dave Trott. I love his work. I love his opinion on advertising. And one of the things he said is, there's one form of media everybody forgets. So everybody's thinking the media is billboards, it's paid ads, it's TikTok, it's, you know, whatever. There's one form of media that everybody's forgetting, and it's word of mouth. And I think TikTok is the new form of word of mouth.
Mm.
It's other people saying this is the place to go. It's other people saying this is the best skincare, you know, product for X. It's literally the new form of word of mouth. And I think that's what's making it powerful, is that user-generated content of other people's recommendations, because ultimately users aren't trusting Google's recommendations anymore.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. It's also that it's like, because you could say, well, you know, Twitter is also, but the difference between Twitter and all the platforms and TikTok is that you can have zero following on TikTok and your opinion can be seen by hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've got no one following you on Twitter, then that's not going to be the case. So yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It's a very exciting time. I think the last few years has really changed the game in terms of content marketing and what that is, and the impact that it can have. I feel like up until the last few years, last couple of years, maybe 3 years, it became quite dull, or like the same old thing over and over again, like, you know, like the more like classic SEO kind of blog type thing, or you know, your brand Instagram account that literally gets 2 likes. And that no one cares about. But in the last few years, I mean, most brands still need to catch up to, like, everything that we're saying right now. I feel like there's a major gap still with what it could be and where most brands are. But it's very exciting that you can really revamp your strategy to grab the attention that is available to you now. Or with like Instagram Reels or TikTok, or, you know, like some thoughts on like the setup of what you've seen from brands you work with? Like, how do they structure themselves to be able to capitalize on that? Do they use you as an agency to also create, like, to have their like daily content, etc.? Like, I'm assuming yes, but can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. I think what I'm seeing with different types of brands is the thing they can't do is create the content, and they have no idea where to distribute it. So they, I think, you know, it's quite easy writing a 2,000 word article, answering the search queries, putting on Google, getting some traffic, but then turning that, you know, 2,000 article into then a short form video on TikTok, maybe then expanding it to a 3-minute on YouTube, then creating pins out of it or GIFs to, you know, increasing your brand awareness. I think distribution is the way that people are struggling. Like, okay, if you think about distribution first, where is it people are going to look for this content, and then work backwards? Okay, well, what content do we create on those platforms? I think that's the thing that brands are struggling with. So I think it's the creation part. I do think creating content has got harder Okay, I'm actually going to make a statement. It's got harder for brands because it's got more expensive, more time and, you know, consuming in that way. But it's actually got easier for, you know, the 15, 14-year-olds creating content all day, every day. And I think that's what brands need to touch into, is like how easy it is for them to be creating those content. So, yeah, I think it just needs to be a shift in mindset, and thinking about distribution and creating content is actually easier than we think. We're just not using the right people or tools. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. How do you deal with a brand that says, when you suggest something like that, and they're like, oh, but it needs to be within our tight, rigid, like, brand guidelines, and so therefore you go to a 14 or 15 year old and they're like, I don't create content this way, so it doesn't work for me. Do you find that's a difficult thing, a difficult sell for some brands?
Yeah, it is. It really is. I try and educate them. I do think, you know, I think brand is the thing that can kill brands in a way. Like
100%.
When it literally has a brand framework, you've got to stick within these boundaries. Often what they're doing is just looking like everybody else. They're trying to create a brand that looks different, but actually they're just creating the same old shit. And, you know, one of the things I've learned, I actually did a TikTok video about this. I'll share it on here. Something I learned from Dave Trott. So Dave Trott, I watch all his videos on YouTube, just obsessed with it. But one of the things people don't realize, so before I got into marketing, I studied psychology. I love psychology. I love the brain and how it works. And essentially, when it comes to advertising, we're trying to steal attention, right? So if there's a brand team like, no, we need to do something different, and we're like, well, we're not going to get attention then. We're not going to stand out in the feed, because what we're currently going through is battle of attention. There is literally millions of pieces of content and we're dying from it. That's why ad blockers is huge right now. We're constantly dying from too much content overload. But we need to stand out. And there's a psychology reason behind this and how to do it. So, you know, there's that question in marketing, is it better to be better or better to be different? It's always better to be different. And the reason being is, what happens is, say if there is 10 adverts on a TikTok feed, as an example, and I want to place my ad as part of that one of 10, I have a 1 in 10 chance of being seen. Mm-hmm. I have 10% of the share of being seen and remembered. But that's not enough for marketers. We want more. We don't just want 1 in 10 chance. We want more. So when you do something different, so say if 1 out of 9 does something completely different, I'm talking, can you remember the Coinbase advert in the Super Bowl when they had just a QR code banging around? The reason they did that is because what happens in the brain, so when we're born, our brain is very binary. So we're quite simple as humans. We think up, down, left, right, black and white. And what that basically means is, we group things quite simply. So if we see 9 adverts that all looked similar, you know, pushing £299 off sofas, whatever the crap it is, and then all of a sudden this advert comes on screen and there's a banging QR code going around the screen, it stands out. It makes you think, what the hell is that? And what happens is, the mind has grouped it into everything that looks like this and everything that looks like that. And all of a sudden we've gone from 1 in 10%, we've gone to 50%. We've got 50% chance of being seen and remembered now. So immediately you've increased your value and your share of being remembered as an advert. And that's the thing, is being different and kind of stepping out of your comfort zone, stepping out of those brand guidelines. That's the thing that I try and encourage my staff and clients to do. Because ultimately, if we're spending more money on marketing when no one remembers it or sees it, then we're just being added to the pile.
Social clip right there.
I love it. Exactly. But I think all of this is a massive opportunity for brands, especially the brands that have budget, to not spend that budget on paid and put that budget into the content creation, which often is not weighted as it should. And it doesn't have to be expensive as well these days. Like, even if you're a small brand with a small budget, and I'm like, that's my daily struggle. Like, you can still work with creators. Like, you know, everyone has a price. You know, you can always find people that can work at the price that you want to create stuff that is going to resonate and you will grab attention that way. Like, but if you do have budget, I mean, there's like a massive opportunity to double down on grabbing attention that way, for sure.
As opposed to paid
ads, and one fuels the other as well. That's the beauty these days as well. It's like this, all jobs, like, I think I know, like, my job a few years ago was so different to the job today. Like, before, it was like the ads, the performance stuff was different from the brand stuff than the social media team. Like, it was always really siloed, and it was wrong too, but it was, at the time, it was a bit more right. But today is so like, if you're still doing that, it's so wrong. Everything is like kind of the same thing, like something that pops on organically. If you do it right, that becomes your ad. And like you said, it will be different because it's been created differently. You already got the organic approval, right? The engagement organically and the comments and stuff. So it will work as an ad too. But yeah.
One thing I will say is we've had quite a few smaller brands get in touch with us recently, and they want to test out TikTok SEO. But when I ask the question, well, what are you doing on TikTok already? And their answer is, oh, we haven't really done anything on there yet. I always say, well, TikTok SEO isn't the answer for you just yet. And the reason being is, ultimately, if people are searching for, you know, a certain query and you guys come up and it's the first time they've seen you on TikTok, then you won't get that conversion because it's the first time they've seen you as a brand. They haven't got that brand trust. They have no idea whether you're an expert. You know, although you rank, they want to see other people still talking about you. I would start there. I think the best marketing strategy is other people talking about your brand or product. 100%. I will always stand by that. There's no point us putting massive budgets about us screaming about how our skincare is the best skincare. We want everybody else saying our skincare is the best skincare.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I said to brands, there's no point investing in you know, being more discoverable on TikTok until you've got people talking about you. Because if people are talking about you and then you come up when people are searching, that's where you're going to get the conversion. So there's no point doing it first, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it does make sense. Yeah. I've been working with a guitar brand recently, and an idea that we kind of put forward for them was that get a little pot of budget aside each month and turn it into like an urban legend that if you make content as just as a guitarist, right, and I tag them or I say in the caption or in, you know, that I'm using that guitar, then we're going to be monitoring for that, and there's going to pick a few a month. We're going to put like £1,000 behind it, and they're going to get a shitload of views, make sure audience happy, but also over time people start searching for that brand and they're not just seeing your content, they're seeing shitloads of other UGC content, and it's all organic.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah. That's perfect. Simple strategy. Getting other people to recommend your brand. There's a value exchange because they're going to get the reach, the views and things like that. So you know, they're not just doing it for free. They get something off the back of that. It's perfect. It's exactly it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's tricky to get people to, like, the holy grail is getting UGC.
Yeah.
And some brands obviously can just attract it without needing to do anything to facilitate people to do that. Basically, it can be a hard barrier, right? It's difficult to say to someone, you guys need to go and just generate a load of UGC. It's like, well, if people aren't talking about me already, like, how can I make them do that? But I think there's ways you can approach it.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things we did, for an example, so we had this hair product client. Essentially, it was a hair styler. So you could change the head on it. So if I wanted straight hair or curly hair, wavy hair, basically I could, you know, change the head and have different hairstyle every day. And I guess, you know, we could create creators talking about that product, reviewing it, whatever. And that's, you know, an easy way of getting creators to talk about our product. But what we actually did is try to find, well, what is it people are already saying? So we looked on Twitter, we looked on Reddit, we looked on customer reviews and found common themes. And a lot of people was basically saying that these, you know, different heads that you put on this hair tool look like sex toys. They did. They look like dildos. Like if you accidentally had one in the back, you know, background of a video on it, you know, it looks like you got a sex toy in the background.
Yeah.
So we did this campaign about, you know, curl your hair, not your toes.
that's great.
But, yeah, just really kind of creative ads. But what that did is got people like, oh my God, yeah, everybody keeps saying mine looks like a sex toy. And then they're getting engaged. So then people was creating organic videos saying my mum walked in and thought this was a dildo, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But we was getting millions of views for free because what we did is we found something. We found a story, a narrative that got people telling their stories as well. And all we did is found that in reviews. Like everyone says these look like sex toys. So that was one little kind of like story starter that everybody started to get involved in, and they all had their own comical narrative to tell, and it got, you know, free content, people talking.
That's
about
amazing.
Sex toys.
I'd love to know how many other brands, like competing brands, in their marketing meetings, like, how can we make owls look like a dildo now?
Yeah.
We need to jump on this trend.
I know, and it was just obviously by accident.
That's wicked. I saw someone, I think it was on TikTok actually, this guy was breaking down some like different viral loops. You know, we have a viral loop like in a product.
And she was using, I can't remember the brand. I mean, there's quite a few examples now, right? But a beauty brand that designs a bottle that looks unique. So when you have an influencer and it's like on their dresser and they're doing like a makeup video, whatever, that is the loop itself. People are seeing the bottle. So they're designing, like, how can we optimize a bottle so people don't hide it when they're doing their videos and they put it on, you know, they have it in the shot as just almost like a piece of decoration. I thought that was like super genius idea.
Yeah, really, really nice. I like that.
I was going to move on to PR stuff. I'll give you a chance with this delay to...
Go for it. I don't know why I'm delayed, but you know, going to the next topic. I'm shy. I'm like, I don't want to like over talk on top of you. I don't know why I'm going to delay.
Like, it's
I'm
so fast. It's like you got to delay because you're faster.
I think I'm not delayed. I'm like, I'm in the future. I'm in advance.
Yeah,
like I'm ahead, and then you're just catching up. Exactly. That's what's happening. Okay.
All
right. No, go for it, Jake. Go for it.
So, Kerry, so digital PR is something that you talk about a lot, and it's great. It's a really interesting subject, I think. And I heard the other day, I don't know if it's public knowledge or not, but OK Magazine is like winding up their print, and they're just going fully online. And obviously a lot of magazines are doing that and have done that recently. And then there's someone I know who has a very successful podcast, and she says that when she gets picked up in print, the impact on her and the podcast, like in the industry, is she can feel that, right? So it like builds a level of kind of, you know, people like cachet, whatever, with people that are in the industry. But when she gets digital mentions, that doesn't happen, but that's when she can then connect with like the general consumer. So I thought that was really interesting, and my question to you is, like, do you think that, because I know you started off in kind of traditional PR, do you think it's a shame that print and that kind of original PR is kind of going that way, or do you think it's just the future?
Oh, good question. I just think it's the future. I think in reality these are businesses, right? They're trying to make money and survive, and it costs money to print these papers. People, you know, if you look at old school movies, you'll see little scenes of people grabbing newspapers whilst they're walking to work, and you know, stood on the tube, you know, reading a paper. You rarely see that now. Like that, people don't have that level of exposure when it comes to print, even down to magazines. Like, I remember when I was younger, I used to always have a magazine, whether it's, you know, if I got in a car to drive to the, you know, to a holiday resort or something, and it was a 2-hour drive, I always had a magazine, you know, as a kid in the back. You just don't do those things anymore. So I guess the opportunity to capture kind of attention and readers and things like that is just declining. So the best way is through online. And there's a couple of ways people are making money online when it comes to OK Magazine, Daily Mail and things like that. Ultimately they're doing affiliate programs, so every time they have a link to a website, so say if they're linking to GoCompare or they're linking to even Amazon, they get a bit of cash every time someone clicks and buys. So you know, people are making mad money. I'm talking multi-millions of pounds every single month through affiliate programs. One of the things, I don't know if you guys watch this or see it, but Forbes and Independent, two big publications, they've gone really big on affiliates. So if you try Google things like, I don't know, best credit cards, because you're looking for a credit card, all of a sudden the Independent comes up and they're recommending credit cards. But actually what you realize is they're optimized that piece, because when you click on to, you know, to get, you know, Capital One credit card, they're making money every time you buy one. Wow. So they're really going big on affiliates. Forbes are doing the same when it comes to health keywords and things like that. But it's ultimately a business. They're trying to scale traffic. So affiliate programs is one. And then ad placements. So ad placements is, you know, if you can get banners and stuff all over the advert. To be honest, I think the ad placements are annoying. And you actually don't make as much money through ad placements on the media when in comparison to affiliates. I just think it's the future. I think people have to adapt. Like, it's really interesting, actually, comparing national publications, and when I say nationals, we're talking BBC, Daily Mail, the big ones, you know. If you look at those in comparison to maybe regionals, so regionals is your Manchester Evening News, your Liverpool Echo, funny enough, we're seeing certain industries get more traffic from Liverpool Echo and sales than any national. So we're seeing mini subcultures of, you know, people are going to the Liverpool Echo because they're looking for beauty tips, they're looking for new products that are trending, and they're, you know, getting that trust from the media, and they're then clicking from the Liverpool Echo to buy the product. we work a lot in beauty, and we're seeing Liverpool Echo and Manchester News, like Evening News, is like the two biggest publications to drive traffic. So I think the media going digital and, you know, if making money off that through affiliate programs is just the way forward. It's just the way that they're going to go.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's interesting because I see in my local, so I live in Colchester, Essex, and I have literally never, ever, I don't even know if it exists in print, but the Colchester Gazette, but in the local like Facebook, Colchester Facebook groups, every single article is in that group. And I find myself on that website all the time.
Yeah. Oh, and it's huge. Like, look at, what did you say it was called? The Colchester what? Express?
Gazette. Yeah.
Colchester Gazette. I'm telling you, if you went on their Facebook, I bet there's like hundreds of thousands of people that follow it.
Like, I reckon, yeah.
60 odd thousand likes on every piece of article. It's crazy. But I think that's really the new form of community at the minute. Yeah. Like we have, you know, in life, we've lost that feeling of community, neighbours, things like that. But the Colchester Gazette is kind of capturing that, you know, local news, local gossip, whatever the hell it is. But they're also bringing in trending gossip, trending products, blah, 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 into their stories. The huge opportunities to get in onto those Colchester Gazettes.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, do you have a formula to, I know, I think some part of your strategy is like working backward from what the title would be interesting for them, and then you build a campaign in reverse engineering that. Is there like a formula, like a Carrie Rose formula for finding those subjects? Because I feel you can do it for like any industry. At this point, you're like the expert for this, you're in your agency, but like, is there like a few steps for people who want to like...
There is, and I'll tell you a fun story about this. So typically when we win a client, especially if it's somebody like that's founder-led, the founder has hired us because they want PR, they want press. If you ask them what publication is your dream to land on, they're always going to say the big ones. I want to be on the BBC. I want to be on Daily Mail. So I had one client in particular, and I remember saying to him, what's your dream publication? Where do you want to land? And he said Forbes. I'm thinking, why would you be on Forbes? And I was thinking, this is an ego thing. He's the owner. He wants to be on Forbes. He wants to be seen as like an authority, I guess, in business and entrepreneurship, even though his business was in the spa space, so selling spa deals and things like that. Well, he was like, I really want to be on Forbes. So I was like, do you know what? I could sit here and, you know, argue till the cows come home, but I'm just going to show him. So the first placement we got for him was on Forbes. I said, I'll go get you on Forbes. Easy. Within a couple of days, we got him a placement on the Forbes, and he was so excited, sending it to his wife. Like, oh my, the first time the business has ever been on Forbes. Like, this is huge for us. And I said to him, wait till you see this, even better. And he was like, what? I went, guess how many people have gone from the Forbes article to your website? And he's like, how many? And I said, four. Four people have clicked from the Forbes to your website. And I said, so what we've learned here is your audience aren't on Forbes. We need to find where your audience are. So what we do is we look at traffic from the media already. So go into Google Analytics and look at, well, what media has already talked about you in the past, in the last 10 years. Let's look at where traffic has come from historically. We then do some audience research of what publications people go to when they're looking for spa deals or spa travel and things like that. And then we also look at the top traffic pages on every single publication. So if we know that the travel section of The Independent gets, you know, 1 million visits per month, whereas the Daily Mail travel section gets 10,000, you know, visits per month, then we know we want to get our brand in The Independent. So we work backwards in, rather than thinking about, you know, we want to get in Forbes, we actually go where the traffic is. So we look at, well, where's the traffic? Where are people reading? And then we go and attack that. And the best way to do that is, okay, well, say if the Independent travel section is the place we want to be, well, what is it they talk about? We can put that into a tool called BuzzSumo. BuzzSumo then pulls out the top headlines, the most engaged articles. And already that's what journalists want. They want engagement, traffic, social shares. So we'll go, okay, well, this topic every single time is talked about gets the most engagement and traffic. Then let's go create something to go talk about that. So I don't know if you guys know, but funny enough, the most engaged topic on the Daily Mail is anything to do with stars. Daily Mail people love the stars. They love anything to do with like...
As in the stars in the sky.
Yeah, they honestly, oh, right. Crazy. Wow, you wouldn't believe it. Yeah, so when it comes to travel, people love talking about sunsets and stars and the best place to see the Northern Lights, you know, that sort of travel kind of, you know, what's going up in the sky. So my job is then to apply that to my clients. So, okay, we've got something to say probably about that, and then get ourselves in the Daily Mail or independent, whatever it is. So, yeah, we work backwards, create the stories to basically go and target independent in that way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very cool. And is it getting the idea of like what, or finding out that things about the stars people love, is that's just from... the volume of content they put out must mean that people are engaging with that.
Yeah, so if you look on, so there's a tool called Buzzsumo. I think it's quite cheap. I think it's honestly like you can get a single seat on it for like £20 or something like that a month. But if you type in the Daily Mail, put in the URL of dailymail.com/travel, for an example, it will pull the last 5 years of articles and it will rank it by the most traffic, social shares, engagements. So well, every time they talk about stars, for some weird reason, it's getting mad shares. So the Daily Mail is just going to go crazy about stars because they're trying to capture traffic. So my job is then to go, okay, well, hey, travel client, we've got something to do with stars. Like we had this stargazing spa product. So you basically go to these spas middle of the night, you know, midnight, and you can do stargazing. You get all these like amazing experience. So we already had a product that we could attach to that narrative. So, you know, that made sense and it was really easy to do. Whereas sometimes you have to be creative. So another angle I can tell you. So I was working with a sneaker client and they sell sneakers, all different types. And they wanted, you know, PR. They wanted to get traffic to the website, PR placements, people talking about them organically. But I was like, but we want to find out, well, what is it people are talking about? And then work backwards. Well, what we found that everybody was talking at the time, the biggest trending topics, you know, everyone was talking about was Squid Game. So, you know, you wouldn't be able to attach Squid Game to sneakers. But when we actually looked deeper into this, what we actually found is, I don't know if you guys ever did, but if you watch Squid Game, they all wear these boiler suits and then a pair of white Vans. And we looked on searches on our website for white Vans because we sold Vans as products on our site. And we saw it was skyrocketed. It was like over 4,000% people was trying to buy a pair of white Vans. We was like, no way. The Squid Game, you know, going viral on Netflix and, you know, Twitter and stuff. It's generated demand for white Vans. Well, let's put ourselves at the center of that topic. So we basically pushed that piece of data out. It went viral. We got over 1,000 media placements. You name it, we was on it. USA Today, Dazed, Hypebeast, all the big publications you can think of. And actually Netflix retweeted it and was like, you know, Squid Game is generating demand for white Vans. And we got all the traffic and all the placements. Wow, so yeah, just applying yourself to a trending topic in PR is the easiest way to get press.
That's amazing. Wow.
And do you still have to, sorry, I've bombarded you with questions, but is a press release still a thing? Like when you generate that piece of content, how do you get it in front of people that might publish it?
I despise press releases. So if any other agency PR will be listening to this, like, no, you've got to have a press release, you've got to have a boilerplate and all this sort of stuff. Bollocks. It's absolute bollocks. All we do, it's to say, I've got to capture attention, right? I need journalists to open my email more than anybody else's. And they're not going to read a 2,000 press release with, you know, all nicely designed and that. I literally email journalists saying like, hey, Ellie, FYI, Squid Game, massive. Well, we basically just found some data showing that, you know, white Vans is up 4,000%. Like, it's exclusive data. No fucker else is going to give you this because of Squid Game is generating this trend. And we give her exclusive data and we send her, oh, we've got you some imagery as well. She's like, yeah, thank you. Within minutes, she's got it up online. So we literally, I literally talk to journalists like I'm talking to my mate. I don't have press releases. The way I capture attention is I always give them a headline. Ellie, this is the sort of headline I'm thinking. And she's like, you know, you've done my job for me. Thank you so much. Copy, paste, live. And it's usually live within 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's our jobs. Our jobs is to, number one, stand out in emails. And number two, capture attention. And I guess traditionally PR people, they'll always argue you need relationships. Like Ellie, I'm saying Ellie, I don't know who fucking Ellie is. I've never spoke to him alive. But now she does. Now she knows I'm going to give her something next time valuable. So I don't think relationships is the thing that people need in PR. You just need really good stories. And I think if you can learn to tell stories, then you're in.
Amazing. And that is why I always wanted to work with you. And I will.
One day.
I will.
Well, lifetime ISIS, I'm sure I can come up with something.
You'll be seeing stars when you see the rate of our lifetime ISA.
How to buy a house on a moon.
Yeah, exactly.
Buy a house on the moon would be you'd be quicker to save for the moon than to save for London. This is great, and I agree with you. Like a lot of traditional PR agencies today, like, and some that I work with recently, the last like 3-4 years, it's all the same bullshit. Like, we need to build a relationship. You won't see any results for the first 4 or 5 months. Then it takes weeks to put like a press release together, and then they push out. They're like, oh, we didn't have the right relationship, and like they decided to go another way. Oh my gosh, it's a pain. It's a pain in the ass. Like, PR has been a pain in my ass my whole career in marketing. I never cracked it.
It's funny because so I'm quite strict with it, so you know I only know this because I've spent 10 years getting it wrong. I've spent 10 years writing press releases, you know, telling my clients it'll take 4 months, that I've spent 10 years doing that. And what I've you know, spent the last kind of, I'd say 5 years in particular, is right, this isn't working, let's try something different. So when I started my agency, to be honest, I think one of the fastest ways I scaled it is, have you ever seen Wolf of Wall Street?
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in it where he writes a script, and he basically tells all the, you know, the idiots in the trading thing, mm-hmm. and they're like, follow this, don't go out the lines. And they all like follow it word for word. That's kind of what I did. I wrote a script of, this is how I write press releases. This is why I, you know, follow it, don't go out the lines. This is the tools I use, all the way from A all the way to Z. And it was like a golden handbook that I gave to my staff. So I was able to get, you know, young talent in that I've never done PR. Mm. They followed my process, and they was going, you know, getting press, viral press, like 24/7. And I'm like, yeah, but it took me 10 years to figure that out. So follow it.
Mm.
And, you know, I have hired staff that have come in and argued my process. You know, they've said, I don't agree with it. Like, in my old business, we didn't do it that way. And I am quite strict, to be honest. I'm going to put my hands up and I'm like, well, this is how we do it, because I know it works. And I'm constantly innovating that process. So, I do think we're quite unique in what we do, but I think your job is to figure it out. Just like paid, if you do an ad and it doesn't convert, then you go do an A-B test or something else, right? And I think that's what PRs don't take on their shoulders. It's their job to figure it out.
Amazing. Well, Carrie, the legendary Carrie Rose, you delivered. Yeah, it's been an hour. We don't want to take too much of your time.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on. That was amazing. Lots of great insights. Yeah. And loved it.
Thank you very much. Really good to meet you both as well.
Carrie, where can people find you? Where would you like people to find you? That sounds weird, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, Carrie Rose PR on most channels, or Carrie Rose on LinkedIn. It's funny because my handle says Carrie Rose PR, and I still do PR, but actually I'm more of I'm a content marketer. That's really what I'm good at.
Yeah.
So I actually thought, shall I drop the PR on the handle? But yeah, I think that would, I've already got my brand, you know. So but yeah, Carrie Rose PR on everything, most channels.
Well, thank you so much for spending an hour with us. It's been really, really great.
Thank you.